Great. I'm excited to see him.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. So we are at Tuesday, May 8th, 2018, and we are talking about Inside Out, continuing from next week. And let's see, what shall we do for an opening? Oh, okay, I've got it. So let's just go ahead and take a couple deep breaths together. And noticing that as we kind of settle into this space here together, noticing our capacity, for feeling lots of things all at the same time, noticing our capacity for temperature change, even dramatic temperature change, and noticing our capacity for being with whatever is. And we just acknowledge that we have the capability of ever-expanding capacity. And so we begin. So have both of you read or looked at 8 through 14 for this week?
I've only looked at part of them.
Okay. How about you, Janet?
I think I got all of them.
Okay. And I think we'll do something similar to what we did last week of just starting where you're most curious. So did one or two jump out for either of you?
I guess to me the one that, I don't know, I guess I'm the devil's advocate, I'll be here.
Mm.
It was, no, which one was it? Oh, solving problems only from a high mood.
Gotcha. Okay.
I understand the problem of, you know, low mood plus problem solving equals a low mood solution. But what if I caused the problem by being in a high mood?
Interesting. So do tell more.
You know, I don't know. You know, if you're feeling like super awesome, and you maybe spend too much money.
Okay.
Really awesomely fun.
Okay. Not that that's ever happened to any of us.
Never happened to
anybody.
Oh,
no.
So devil's advocate says you better solve it in a solemn mood, otherwise the high mood will just make it worse. Is that what you're thinking?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's like maybe it needs to be maybe not a high mood, low mood. Maybe there's like some sort of a neutral mood.
Oh, I like that. And absolutely, to me, the whole thing is on a spectrum. So there's maybe zero is neutral, and then either direction goes off into infinity, right? Barely, slightly lie. That's the combination of low and high. Barely, slightly low one direction, barely, slightly high one direction, and then off they go to super, super high and super, super low. So maybe you bring up a really good point, something I've never thought of, that maybe problem solving can start anywhere from neutral to maybe not even to the highest high. Well, I don't know. Maybe in the highest high we don't even perceive problems. I don't know.
Maybe.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking about the Einstein quote, you know, we cannot solve our problems with the same level of thinking that created them.
Yeah.
And so if you create a problem from high mood thinking, then you need to go either lower or higher to solve it. So, like, you know, I don't know this. I'm super curious about the specifics of Janet's problem, and like, and
maybe she's and, willing to share. Maybe she isn't. What say you, Janet?
Well, I can't think of a specific time this happened, but it's happened to me before, like while you're just like having a great time and, you know, everybody's having a great time and I don't know, you know, even if it's just like I went out with my friends to dinner and we may have like, you know, decided to go to, you know, La Petite instead of Chili's.
Okay.
And I'm thinking, yeah, that'd be great. And then I get home and go, I didn't have $75 to spend on dinner tonight.
So it's almost like the moment takes over.
Yeah. It's like I'm having a great time and I want to go hang out with my friends and it seems so fun. And it was fun. You know, it wasn't like the experience was bad or anything. It was just like the kind of the maybe the high spirit hangover.
Gotcha.
Now,
okay.
I'm kind of curious about did it end up being worth it? As in, did you recover and have enough money and all that stuff? Or was the stress of realizing that you had to, like, make some extra money in order to pay for the night, was it, like, worse than the fun of the night?
Normally it's worth it.
Good.
I would say 99% of the time it's probably worth it.
Then I would say for 1% of devil advocate, yeah.
And so, you know, maybe that really isn't like a huge problem.
Yeah.
I kind of get where you're coming from, and, you know, I was thinking about, you know, maybe you make a big purchase or whatever, like you're in a high mood and you are thinking, oh my gosh, my business is going to be great, and you're feeling all of the possibility, and you think, hey, I feel like I can invest in new software or whatever that's like $1,000 or something like that, and then, you know, you feel like the fear and the weight of it for a minute, and or even maybe a month or two after. And then I'm also thinking, you know, two things. One is, if it's a high mood thing and we're more connected with the divine, then I like to think that those kinds of decisions made in some clarity and hope and promise are also the sort of things that that divine connection is going to help us work out, you know? It's like,
I
oh,
agree.
Yeah. Yeah. And then on the other hand, it's also, and, you know, it sounds like it works out, and I think it usually works out. There might be some stress around it. But then there's the part of me that's also the devil's advocate for that solution, which is, was that really, really a high mood? Was I really connected to the divine? Or did I just throw myself into a year of debt trying to pay off, you know, $5,000 of a fucking program or whatever. You know?
True. Yeah, I mean, I can agree with, like, you. I mostly do things because I'm positive and hopeful all the time. But I do things that are from, like, the scarcity fear part, too. And those feel worse, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Even though they work out in the end, too, usually. You know, I don't know. I mean, just one of those things I've never been without a meal or a place to live or, you know, things like that. So really life for me is really pretty darn good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, and I like, to me the interesting part was, yeah, was that high mood really a high mood or was that kind of a crazy manic mood or something, you know?
Right. You know, and I'm kind of wondering, so say it is a problem, you know, and you spend too much money and it looks like a lot of credit card debt and it is something you actually need, but you come off of that mood and say you want to solve it on a level of a high mood. So it's like you did something maybe at a higher vibration and then you dump down to the low of like, oh my gosh, what did I do? And you have the fear around it. And then almost like you have to swoop back up past the mood where you bought it from to like connect even more deeply with the divine intention behind it. So you can have peace from the fear too.
Mm. Yeah.
That's like a whole other twist.
Yeah.
I mean,
it makes sense with that Albert Einstein quote because you do have to be in a different energy space.
Yeah.
To think differently about it. Whether
right,
it's lower
so like,
or higher.
I know. I was thinking about, like, in general, I think I'd prefer to go to a higher mood to solve a problem if it was already in a high mood. And then I can also see the advantage of, like, the low mood. Like, you know, if I'm feeling good and maybe I made some commitments that I can't actually figure out or maybe I gave away some of my power to somebody and, like, I think most people might consider, say, anger a lower mood than, you know, whatever. I don't know if that's totally true, but it might take anger to get yourself out of a situation with maybe an agreement with someone. Like, oh, I can do that, or they've taken advantage of you, and you thought that you were in a higher place when you said yes, and then you realize, wait, this person is taking advantage of me again. And you might have to dip down into a little bit of anger and solidity to really, like, I'm not going to fucking do that now. I see what you're doing.
Hmm.
What do you think?
I think that's entirely possible, that it could be fueled by anger in a way that's empowering. And so maybe generally going higher is helpful, but maybe there are circumstances where going different, and in this case what some might consider lower, actually is what's needed. I also really like the part where sometimes just waking up the next morning, it's like, oh, that's not really a problem at all. Like, there's nothing to work out.
Oh, right. And, like, I think I'm imagining in that using anger, you know, there's, like, the stories of, I think Jesus has one, and I think Buddha might have one, where the whole righteous anger thing, and that, I think, would be even a higher level spot. You know, like, I'm asserting my voice and my boundaries and my power, which is a big deal, and I might have to be forceful. And, And then, you know, from that higher spot, you may also realize, oh, this is a one-time thing, or, oh, this doesn't actually matter to me that much. And you can just sort of let it go.
Yeah. Is there more,
yeah.
Janet?
Oh, I was just thinking about the anger being from a higher level, maybe, a higher energy level. Just because sometimes I do things out of spite a lot. Somebody pissed me off, and then I'm like, I'll show you. I'm doing this. And it's always better, you know, it does something to spur me on to doing something better.
Mm.
I mean, I'm going to show you, and I'm going to go
flatten your tires or something, I'm going to go to you and I can go get that degree. Don't worry about it, you know.
Right. I do think that's a good version of spite. I mean, it's not a nice word, but if you use it to motivate yourself, and it's like, yeah, you think I can't do this, mom, professor, asshole, friend, you know, whatever it is, but I'm going to show you and do it. Sometimes that's the motivation you need, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So to me, that's like an higher energy level of anger or spite or something. So, I mean, I guess it is, it's kind of all on a, it is all on a spectrum.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's worth mentioning at this point, day 14 is about dissolving problems, and it starts with a Michael Neal quote, "When we let our problems sit for a bit, they are as likely to dissolve as be solved because they only existed as thoughts in our mind." I think that part is super important, and we can tend to forget it really easily. Oh, maybe the way I'm thinking about this is the problem. So that might even go to the spite one, right? I'm thinking I have to take action and take a stand. And it's like, well, just go get your degree, you know? You don't actually even have to fight with this. Just go get your degree.
Yeah.
And back to your original one about spending $75 on dinner, but 99% of the time it works out. It's like, oh, I thought it was a problem. It really isn't a problem.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What did you say, Ephraim?
I said, yeah, right.
Okay.
And I guess, and the other thing I've been thinking about is, you know, like in Kundalini yoga, they're always, you know, meditation is to bring you into this, the yoga and the meditation is to bring you to a neutral mind where those things don't affect you so much. Like, you know, that's the way it is and that's, you know, it's fine. And I don't truly understand probably the neutral mind because I'm not that, you know, I'm not that elevated in my work.
That's okay. There's other lifetimes for that.
And, you know, to me, sometimes it seems kind of boring. Like, well, if nothing's, like, really high and nothing's really low, I don't know. Does that sound very fun?
No shit.
But
yeah.
The parts that, you know, like, where you don't want to be mad and fearful and that kind of stuff, but, you know, yeah, sure, more neutral would be great.
I kind of see what you're saying, that neutral is like, oh, is that like one step away from death? Eh, either way. And yet, I would go out on a limb and say most of our suffering comes from being attached to it being a certain way. This way is really good. If it goes this way, that's really bad. And I would feel awful if it went that way.
True.
I used to hate the whole summer. And it's like, you know, that's a quarter of your life. That's a little too much to just hand over to heat. So now what?
No shit.
We are very complex, us human beings, our big brains.
Yeah, and I can see how a lot of it is just our thinking. You know, all the millions of thoughts going in our head all the time is how we perceive what's happening.
Yes.
You know, I've been thinking about that a lot lately, that reality is so relative, and we tend to believe what we think for some strange reason because we're inaccurate like 90% of the time. And like this whole inside out part sort of reflects that. So say we have regurgitated thoughts all day long, 90% of the day, and it's probably more than that, like 98% of the day, and we believe those thoughts all day long, and then we get an inspired thought, and it's like, oh my gosh, that's amazing, and you know, we all the three of us think that's the one we can believe, but we tend to believe all of them, and maybe even doubt the inspired one, because you know, that's the one that's like, hey, go build a whole business, and you can do it like this, and here's the inspiration and how to do it, and just jump in, yay! And you're like, fuck that. My regurgitated thoughts just told me 500 times, like in the last second, that was a stupid idea, so I think I'll believe that. And there we are creating our reality, when the reality of that divine connection, we all three like to believe, is that jumping in and following that call is the way to go.
That is true.
It's so hard to not believe the 98% of whatever it is you're thinking that is not the call. And all that is the least likely to be reality.
Is there even any such thing as reality, or is there Ephraim's reality, Danith's reality, Anne's reality?
Exactly.
Right?
Yep. I mean, the interesting thing about science and those sorts of fields is that they think that they know reality, and they're all just as stuck in their reality as we are, stuck in our reality. I'm just thinking about control, you know, how we all want to control some things in our life, and the illusion that we create around what reality is our version of control, and it's a total illusion, and we believe it.
That's a really good point. It's that you're likening it to control because we now have something to hang on to.
Yeah.
And
it's what
we don't
think the reality is.
Yes.
Right, like, yeah.
We don't believe it's a belief. We believe it's true. It's real.
Yeah.
It's what's actually happening.
Yeah. When I was in school, like doing some graduate stuff, I never got a graduate degree, but a few classes. And, you know, it was kind of a language, philosophy, critical theory, English sort of degree. And one of my teachers, and this, I think about this all the time, talked about, like, the idea of a tree. And if the three of us were looking at the same tree, somehow from the same spot, none of us would see it in the same way or experience it in the same way. And if you were to walk up and touch that tree, all of us, we went up and touched the tree and felt it in the same spot, we would all feel different things, and it would be completely layered over with all of our ideas about what that tree is. And so nobody can touch the same tree.
And that's where it's the simplest. Now
right.
Put two people in a relationship where there's infinite aspects to the relationship.
Right. Every little thing we think is reality, and then, oh, wait. You didn't even see it like that, did you? Oh, no. Same thing. Same thing happened.
Well, and no two people have the exact same experiences all their life, so that you are, like, you put different meanings on things than anyone else, too, because they don't know what your experience has been.
Right.
You know, maybe you, one time when you were a little kid, you know, ran headlong into a tree, and that bark felt really bad when it hit your head.
Yeah. And once again, that's an easy one. I mean, like, the child that was abused, I mean, every relationship or every interaction with that gender or that body type or whatever is going to be tainted by the reality of that abuse for them, which in general, like there's a lot of work around around recalling abuse, for example, and how most of the time, like not long after, and, you know, we're talking about childhood abuse, so this is, you know, 20 years later when you start drumming it up in your with your therapist, there is, you may have vivid recollection of what happened and exactly how it happened, and chances are even that is wrong. It's certainly real for you, but it probably isn't accurate. At least that's a study that I heard recently.
As to whatever accurate is.
Exactly, because in the recall of anything, the way that you feel it and reimagine it, it's almost impossible for it to be actually what happened. Not that the abuse didn't happen, but I also read a study recently about maybe it was 10 or 20 years ago where they would do therapy and they would, you know, unlock the abuse that happened to them 20 years ago and then believe it. And one of the people that was really public with that, who said, oh my gosh, I remember being abused by my father. And she came out and she said, you abused me, and her whole family divided and everything changed and the whole, you know, the family split literally. And then like 20 years later, she was like, oh shit, that didn't actually happen.
Wow.
Yeah, and the family never recovered. And then, you know, like for me, looking at this perspective of you can't really remember anything accurately, I think, well, maybe it did actually happen. But there was a movement in therapy at that time to kind of recall those things, to kind of find reasons for why you were a certain way. And they actually, it's like illegal now to practice that particular type of therapy because it fucked up so many people and so many people's lives and families and all that stuff. Because they weren't actually remembering accurately. Oh, I know where I read that. It was in The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. Pretty interesting book. Kind of hard to read, but it was really good.
Hard to read in what way?
It certainly challenges a lot of, like, the usual beliefs. And it's one of those books that, like, proposes things that really make you think about it, but it might not feel good to think about it. So at the same time, it has a lot of powerful things that do feel good to think about. It really just kind of makes you question how you view reality, kind of like what I'm saying right now. I sort of question it all.
Yeah.
And so the key, follow the inspired thoughts.
Well, really, you know, if you think about, not thinking about memories now, but just thinking about, I don't know, maybe a decision. Like right now I'm looking at, I'm going to be in Denver more, and some days I'm really excited about that because there's certain things I can do in Denver that I can't do here. And other days I'm like, what am I thinking? I live in paradise. And it's like, this isn't a memory, right? It's my perspective.
Yeah.
And so I can have a perspective all the way from, I'm crazy. I shouldn't go to Denver more. That's why I moved. And it's like, well, but there's a lot of really compelling reasons to be in Denver more now. Okay, that's good. But then everything in between, like sometimes I can be, you know what? Either way is fine. And so that's just a thought about something like it hasn't even happened yet. So then there could be the whole perspective of once I'm in it, I'm the only person. Like it's not three people looking at a tree now, right? It's me in my three moods or my 300 moods, right?
Yeah.
Looking at the same thing. Don't even have to include anybody else, right? I'm not trying to get agreement with anybody or figure it out with anybody. So maybe the whole taking our thinking so seriously maybe we could loosen our grip on that. Like, it's not the Holy Grail.
Yeah, I do totally agree with that. And
so,
we've made it the Holy Grail in the Western world.
Yeah, I wonder why.
There's an appeal to logic in the brain because it can kind of figure things out and explain things. And, you know, that moves us into, you know, science and stuff like that. And supposedly we know things, like the Earth is the center of the galaxy.
Is that not true?
No, the sun is.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Yep.
You know, not having as many thinking strengths as you guys, there's lots of things that I don't know, and I'm fine with that.
Yeah. And so the thing is, you know, for a long time, everybody believed that the Earth was the center of the galaxy, and then somebody comes along and says, no, it's actually the sun, and let me show you some proof as I see it. You know, who knows if this, when this will be proven wrong or if.
Mm-hmm.
And they pick that guy. I forget who it was. Galileo, Copernicus, I don't know if you know Janet, but they take that guy and throw him in prison and call him a heretic.
Yeah, one of those guys, or both of them, I'm not sure.
And it's like, wow, all this stuff that we all thought was true, but it's so convincing, the mind and this rational thought, that it's really intoxicating because it also gives us the illusion that we know what reality is and that we have more control over it.
So you seem to think there's a pretty strong connection between being very attached to thoughts and control.
Yeah, from that I do. I don't know if I'd thought about it particularly, but, you know, my clients, the ones that are more in their head, have a lot more trouble with wanting to control everything. And usually that comes from some kind of fear or, well, actually generally fear.
So, good to notice.
Yeah.
Well, and I think when people are trying to control other people, they do it through fear.
So true.
So, fear is kind of the base of the control thing.
Yeah.
It makes you feel the need to control everything because you're in fear of something.
And then you control with
or
fear.
And then, yeah, and if you want to control someone else, you put the fear in them and they go, oh, shit, what? Oh, yeah, okay, we should do this. Okay, that'll fix it.
And one of the
like
best...
Feeling... What?
Go ahead.
I said... I don't like feeling fearful. Whatever you say will make it go away. Okay.
Right? And the one that's like so prevalent, it probably has been for all time, but the one that feels so prevalent in this current world is that fear of missing out. You know, I've got to buy this right now because what if I never get a chance to get it again? Or, you know, I've got to make this leap right now because what if, what if there's never a chance to do it again or whatever it is. And I know that is a fear that has motivated me a lot of times. And then like about a year ago, maybe less, I heard, you know, they call fear of missing out FOMO. I heard, I heard joy of missing out, JOMO instead. It's like, how about you celebrate the fact that you made space for something that really makes you joyful?
Nice. I want to join that movement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we need to wrap up. It seems like we've kind of been all over the place. What do you guys take away from this? Maybe it's okay with you that we've been all over the place. So just set me straight if that's the case.
It honestly doesn't feel all over the place to me. It feels like we've been circling around this question of like I think I could almost sum it up as we're circling around once again the question of inspired thought and regurgitated thought and higher thinking and lower thinking or mood. And I think, like, you could use energy or any of those things in there. And I think we've spent a lot of time trying to discern between the two and looking at how lower thinking and what problem solving is let's see, you know, more dangers and characteristics of what those lower mood and regurgitated thoughts actually do and how much they influence our personal realities, because that's all we have, how much they influence that and can endanger how you are able to even pursue inspired thinking.
Mm.
I don't think we necessarily, none of us have really questioned the idea of inspired thinking that much, because I think we all want to believe it, and we do believe it, whether or not that's true, whatever true is, but that we really revere inspired thinking. And honestly, when I think about inspired thinking, there's so much more to it. Like, I feel like it's so much more expansive, and I can feel it, like, on a different kind of emotional level that feels good, and I can feel it, like it feels like a spiritual thing, and so I want to be able to follow that mode of thought and way of living. It's just the 98% that's fear-based makes it a lot harder. That's what I got out of it.
Well, that's pretty clear, actually. Thank you. How about you, Janet?
That pretty much said it all.
I've noticed, I would not say that I'm aware of regurgitated thought 98% of the time, and it could be because I'm not noticing, and it could be because it's not always there. And I suppose living in a more quiet environment for a while has helped. It's sort of like, I can just let that go for a little while. And so then it's not like there's only the choice of inspired thinking and regurgitated thinking. Sometimes it's just like, oh, a little bit of a thinking break. And there's probably stuff running in the background that I don't even know about, which would probably tend to be the regurgitated thinking. So I don't know.
I feel like
you were going to say something. Go ahead.
Well, now two things. I feel like the regurgitated thinking, like, comes to the forefront when you're ready to get out of your comfort zone or do something different.
Good
That's
point.
When it starts, like, really coming out. Otherwise, it might be back there, but we're not really listening to it as much. But when you get to a point where you're going to try something new or, you know, kind of do something a little bit scary, then that regurgitated thinking, like, starts yelling at you instead.
Ah, so interesting. Back to control again.
Yeah, because it's coming from the fear of, like, don't do that. That'll be bad. We don't know what's going to happen if you do that.
Yeah.
That reminds me so much of that book. Oh, of course, that just slipped my mind. The art of the war of art.
Yes.
You guys read that?
Yes.
Yeah. It reminds me so much of that because, you know, according to that book, and I think I believe it because I've seen it and Janet has, and I'm sure you have, which is, yeah, you want to step outside of your comfort zone and do something that might be, you know, good for the world or good for you. Hello, fear. Here comes the fight. Or
yeah.
Resistance, and the word he used.
Yeah. Well, to be continued.
Oh, I had one more thought real quick.
Of course you do. Go ahead.
Just before I forget it was about, you know, when you were talking about how the Western world has put so so much reverence towards thought, I guess. And is that to keep us out of our feelings and our body so we don't really know what's going on?
Ooh, I like that. I've never thought that before.
That's
yeah,
I had Ephraim was talking, so.
I instantly thought about, you know, supposedly the patriarchy, which would be very thought-based, takes over from the more feminist matriarchy sort of thing, and they revere thought, use it for control with fear, all of that stuff, and we lose our connection with those things, the, you know, the larger wholeness of who we are, which I think I like to romanticize that that's what the feminist, the matriarchal version was.
Yeah. More body-based, more feeling-based.
Yeah. Yeah.
Possibly. Yeah. Maybe even likely.
I think likely.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, as a good deliberative, I'm willing to doubt everything.
Excellent. So you not only have lots of thinking strengths to fuel you, then you get to think of all aspects forever with deliberative.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
It's magic.
Indeed. All right. Well, let's, what shall we close with? I'm inspired to close with something that we co-create. Either of you, did something pop into your head when I said that?
Actually, what popped into my head was, I'd love to hear one of your poems or prayers.
Oh, well, we always have them available.
I vote with Ephraim.
You vote with Ephraim? Okay.
Yes.
So it is done. Let's go get the book. All righty, let's see what we got here. Oh, reminder, next Wednesday is my birthday, so I'm taking next week off, so we will not meet next week. We will meet on the 22nd because there's actually five Tuesdays in, what is this month, May.
Yay, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Have an amazing time.
Plan on it. All right. So what popped up is not in the current book. It's the book to come forward.
Yay.
Yeah, and it's called Love Is. Love Is. I can't buy it. Trade for it, beg for it, demand it, or work for it. Love is. I can open my eyes, soften my gaze, deepen my breath, and acknowledge what is. Love is. Love is, and I am.
Nice.
Yeah, that was good.
Thank you. It's sort of a whole different field than where we've been playing.
Or maybe not.
Maybe it was on the higher part.
Yay. All right. Well, we will continue the conversation in a couple of weeks.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. All righty. Bye for now.
Bye. Happy birthday.
Thank you.